Hello and welcome to the CPA Australia podcast. Your weekly source for accounting, education, career and leadership discussion.
Hello and thanks for joining us today. I'm Elvin Yong, Singapore Country Head for CPA Australia. This week on the CPA Australia podcast, we'll discuss corporate governance and sustainability in the context of financial institutions in the Asia-Pacific region. We'll focus on issues on risk management, technology, and sustainability. These are among the key things that boards of companies will need to look at in their oversight function. High standards of corporate governance for financial institutions have become even more critical amid massive disruptions to the global economy from factors such as the COVID-19 pandemic, growing global trade tensions, technology advances, and cybersecurity. As a CPA Australia member, you're likely to be working in a finance function of your organization, and this is where you may encounter these issues in your financial reporting responsibilities. Our guest today is Associate Professor Mark Guntin, an expert in corporate governance at the National University of Singapore Business School. Professor Mark, welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
Now, you've just published a report titled Banking on Governance, Ensuring Sustainability. This analyzed a range of corporate governance issues affecting the financial services industry in the Asia-Pacific region. You've studied the 50 largest listed banks and the 50 largest listed insurance companies by market cap. Now, briefly, what are the three most pressing issues that you have observed?
Well, I think first is of the whole area of risk governance and risk management. And the second is the issue of corporate culture. And the third is the issue of sustainability or ESG. I think those will be the three most pressing issues.
Well, we're going to spend some time unpacking those issues. But in the meantime, though, COVID-19 has affected businesses and individuals like no other crisis before. How do you think the pandemic will change some of the observations of your report?
Right. When we were wrapping up this report and COVID-19 happened, so one of the things we did was then to look back at last year, how banks and insurance companies were looking at the whole area of risks and how many of them actually identified a pandemic as a key risk. But what we also, if we now look at what has happened with COVID-19, I guess we would have emphasized a lot more on this whole area of risks and how companies need to take a rather dynamic approach to it, that it shouldn't be a box-ticking kind of approach to risk governance and risk management, and also perhaps emphasizing more rather than just the issue of composition of the board. I think among composition, diversity is obviously something that is important if you want people to be able to think about all sort of risks properly. And also the culture, I think, of the board. Probably those are the things that we would have emphasized a bit more.
On the point of risk management that you mentioned, so it is that observation that you just pointed out. This report has shown how unprepared the world was for COVID-19 because only one out of the 50 largest listed banks and three out of the 50 largest listed insurance companies in the Asia-Pacific region had identified a pandemic as one of the key risks. So is the apparent lack of preparedness something of a concern compared with, say, the argument that this is a black swan event that few could have reasonably expected?
Well, I think it is a concern. We could debate whether it's a black swan event. Some people have described it as a grey rhino event, which is that it was highly probable, neglected with enormous impact. So, if you look at the number of smaller pandemics that have happened, right, you kind of say that isn't a big one coming. I think before 9/11, people thought that was not going to happen. And before GFC, probably people were not kind of looking out for that. So I think the lesson is really to take a very broad view of the kind of risks. And boards need to really think very carefully what are the risks that really are going to distort our business and do it in a very serious way.
When you say that the boards would need to be more open, perhaps look at risk in a broader area, how do you think they should do that?
Well, first, you come back to the composition of the board, right? That you need people who bring in different perspectives, that with technology, different backgrounds and so on, and just bringing different perspectives, that they are not kind of coming from the same background and so on. I think that's particularly important. And I think boards also need to, you know, look for people who are always on a continuous learning mindset. You know, I think every day, you know, I mean, people who always on a daily basis almost keep up with what's happening around the world. And I think probably boards need to probably have a lot more conversation about, you know, maybe at every board meeting, you know, what is happening out there in the world that could actually affect our business.
So in a way, when boards think about this, looking in a horizon, perhaps as to what sort of risks they should be looking at, would you advocate that they look at it in terms of different categories, in terms of things that are most likely to happen versus those that are, as we said, black swan events or things that are really, really unlikely in a course of business?
Yes, I think they have to, you know, I mean, usually when you do risk assessment, right, you will look at the likelihood of occurrence or the probability and the likely impact. So you will do that. So already boards, many boards do that, and many management teams do that as part of the risk assessment process. But the worry is, of course, how informed are those assessments? And of course, you know, things which are, you know, I guess things which may be highly unlikely and the impact could be enormous. Maybe boards need to pay a lot more attention to those kind of risks.
So you mentioned about getting more informed about, you know, what's happening out there. But in the area of risk management, though, how would you recommend they go about doing this?
Well, we go back to, having serious conversation about the key risks, you know, not taking a box-ticking approach. So, in fact, before COVID-19, right, I mean, many boards, especially financial institutions, are thinking about technology disruption and thinking about issues like cybersecurity. So they were focused on those. There was, of course, the issue of trade war, concerns about income inequality. So there are all those kind of things that are out there, industry convergence. So there were already all sorts of risks, right? So, but I think that the issue is whether it becomes a box-ticking approach. You know, I've kind of been involved in these kind of exercises where, you know, what the board, I think, has to constantly challenge, or the audit committee has to constantly challenge, is management assessment of those risks. You know, you haven't, you know, this is not weighted very highly in terms of the likelihood or the impact. Are you sure? And have discussion around that. I think boards need to be very engaged in that kind of conversation.
I want to move on to the technology area that you mentioned, Prof. How do you think the use of data analytics can improve decision-making and risk management?
Well, data analytics has always been there, you know, in terms of doing data analysis, if you're right. Like, but now with technology, obviously you can handle enormous sets of data and at very rapid speed. So I think the advantage now is, of course, just so much more data you can use, and it can help decision making because you can easily crunch that data and come up with information very quickly. So obviously, you know, a lot of companies use that in decision making, like looking at what consumers are buying if you look at the e-commerce kind of space, right? But you could also, of course, now consider using it in risk management too, because you can now look at, you know, you can use a lot more data, you know, to kind of form your views of risk. For example, right, if you are now looking at the issue of reputation risk, I think in the past it's very qualitative. Probably with data analytics, it could be more quantitative.
What about the issue of detecting fraud, though? That is one key risk for most organizations. So how do you think data analytics will help in preventing or even enhancing the detection of fraud by companies and therefore improve their audits?
It will certainly help. So, but I think we have to also be aware that data analytics is kind of, you're looking for patterns, almost developing hypotheses, you know, from crunching lots of data. So I think that helps. But I think at the end of the day, there's that judgment element that is also very important. And the other thing is, I think data analytics will be helpful in a lot of operational type fraud, for example. But you have very high level fraud or very one-off kind of fraud, then it's much harder, right? So I think it comes back to needing judgment and common sense and data analytics is basically a good complement, you know, to judgment and common sense, if you like.
So perhaps give us a sense, because I think a lot of companies use data analytics now, and this is considered to be something that's really par for the course for accountants and finance professionals. So when they are trying to leverage analytics, how do you think they should really complement that whole judgment and also relying on the technology? How do you bring the two together?
Well, so, you know, you use the technology that you have, but at the end, I think you do need like a senior management to kind of who have tremendous experience in the business, directors who have tremendous experience in the business, to actually look at the data to kind of say, does it make sense? As I said, you know, at the end of the day, it is just, you can always find relationships between things, but actually at the end of the day, are they merely correlations, for example? Do they merely happen together, or is there really a pattern that you can actually leverage on? So I think that requires judgment, I think, from experienced management and directors.
All right, we're going to stay on the technology theme for the moment, but we're going for a short break. Coming up, we'll talk about how financial institutions are managing the challenges of data and cybersecurity and how boards can help to drive this process. We'll be right back after this brief message.
The Public Practice Conference will be going virtual this year on Thursday, the 8th of October. This one-day flexible program is designed to provide you with the tools and knowledge to navigate today's challenges and build your firm for the future. Confirmed speakers include Alan Fitzgerald. Registrations are now open. Go to cpaaustralia.com.au/PPC or look for the link in the show notes.
Hello again. You're listening to a CP Australia podcast on corporate governance and sustainability in the context of financial institutions in the Asia-Pacific region. Our guest today, Professor Mark Yuntin of the National University of Singapore Business School, still with us. Professor Mark, in your view, how ready are financial institutions and companies today in the area of data and cybersecurity?
Well, I would say definitely in terms of investment in data security and cybersecurity, data and cybersecurity, I would say that financial institutions are clearly ahead, generally ahead of other companies. But of course, they also face much greater risks. And in terms of losses from data and cybersecurity breaches is going to be potentially massive. So obviously, they have to invest a lot more resources. So I think they are more prepared. But having said that, right, we have seen financial institutions, even central banks in some countries, facing cybersecurity breaches. So there was a big one in the US, right, where which was a very technology-based bank which moved from data centers to cloud and then had vulnerabilities and huge data breach. So I think financial institutions need to pay more attention to that, continue to pay attention. But I think for other companies, my experience is that they are probably not as ready as they should. Even sometimes having proper data policies and cybersecurity policies in place.
Do you think this is something that should be left to the devices of the financial institutions and insurance companies, or is this something that should be driven by the regulators in terms of getting these companies to be investing in cybersecurity and also protecting their data?
Well, I think for financial institutions, definitely the regulators are driving it. You know, in most countries, the regulators are imposing regulations on financial institutions to have strong data and cybersecurity policies in place. I think for other companies, that's a little bit different. So at the moment, while there's emphasis on kind of risk management and so on, there are some who are still not. Actually, there are many which are still not putting enough attention on this whole area of data and cybersecurity.
Now, you've alluded to this before in terms of the role of the board. So how do you think board should set the direction and articulate the need for the necessary skill sets to help these companies deal with this whole area of data and cybersecurity?
Well, I think firstly, I mean, at the board level, the board obviously need a good search and nomination process. So increasingly, they have to look at what are they at our stage in terms of our business, what are the most important skills and experience that we need? I think for many, many of them, I think technology increasingly is important. But they also need to think about what kind of technology background that you need. If the company, the institutions is going through digitization of its operations, for example, then it may be useful to have somebody on the board with who have gone through that kind of experience. So I think having a robust search and nomination process, making sure you have the different diversity of skill sets, a good balance between people who have broad business experience, who are all constantly in touch with what's going on in the business world and in the general environment, versus those with specialist skills. So you need a whole lot of that. You need that diversity in age and gender and so on. So the old days of kind of going out around the boardroom and asking, who do you know, to bring somebody to the board, I think those days are truly over. That's at the board level. And clearly, the board would also need to be a little bit more involved in ensuring that those who are responsible for technology, data security, and so on, are properly trained or properly equipped to discharge their responsibilities.
And so this is an interesting proposition, Prof, because you mentioned, of course, the boards needing those kinds of skill sets, whether they be in technology, data, cybersecurity, or thereabouts, and also in terms of diversity. But do you think that this is something that ought to be solely contained in the confines of the board, meaning those skills are only required amongst the board members? Or is this something that is much larger, that the board members will in fact be working with specialists, with management, people with the specific skill sets in these areas in order to make those decisions?
Yes. No, it's not at the board level only, because the board, we have to bear in mind that the board is essentially there to set policies, provide strategic direction and oversight. So in fact, the board shouldn't be looking at technical people in terms of technology, but people who are able to ask the right questions, you know, to be able to look at IT governance, for example. So have the technology division make presentation and be able to ask questions around good questions around technology risks and so on. So that's what you kind of need on the board. And the board then needs to, you know, while the board is not going to micromanage the organization, but I think in terms of those critical skills, critical positions, the board need to have some comfort that you do have the right people who are looking after those different areas.
Let's move on to the issue of sustainability in your report. You know, for many companies, it seems that sustainability is still largely a reporting exercise. So what more do you think needs to be done to push companies to embed environmental and social considerations into their strategies, their policies, their decisions?
Well, a lot of the push is actually coming from regulators who are placing more emphasis on sustainability issues, sustainability reporting, and so on. But a lot of the push is now coming from institutional investors. So what we see is a lot more money going into ESG-type funds and moving away from traditional funds. So I think institutional investors are going to be the push. But I think we are now seeing a debate in terms of what truly ESG is about. Because I think when we started this journey, it was very much just sustainability reporting. And many companies have not embedded it into their strategies. But I think today, as we move along this journey, I think boards needs to, you know, this has to be an issue right at the board level, not something that you delegate to just management or an officer or consultant in the company. So boards, when they are making a decision, for example, if you're kind of starting a new business or investing in a new business, you know, in the past, traditionally, the board will probably be thinking about the financial considerations and maybe some of the risks, but not maybe the ESG type risk. So probably the board would now have to think about how is this business going to affect the environment? You know, how is it going to affect kind of the community and so on? I think boards need to think much more seriously about them when they are these kind of issues, when they are discussing strategies, for example.
Now, Obviously, getting those things on the board's agenda requires a little bit of a push. Do you think this is something that's guided by the board directors themselves, or, you know, the regulators need to come in a little bit harder, if you like? Because in Singapore, for example, companies are regulated by the Singapore Exchange regulation. And at the same time, the SGX RegCo had also gone on a comply or explain mode in terms of sustainability. Is this the approach that ought to be taken going forward, or is this something that needs to be legislated with a harder push of the law, as it were?
No, I don't think legislation is the way to go. However, as we have seen over the recent years in most countries around the world, regulators are putting more emphasis on sustainability, stakeholder interests, and so on in their codes of governance and so on. So regulators in this area could push more, could introduce requirement to report. But at the end of the day, it needs to push from the boards, and the push from the boards will also come from the push from the institutional investors. I would imagine that many of the biggest institutional investors, in fact, I know that many of the biggest institutional investors and asset managers would be engaging with companies and talking about, you know, how are you embedding some of these ESG considerations into your strategies and so on.
So the other thing to embed is culture in a whole guise of corporate governance and sustainability, according to your report. How do you think financial institutions and other companies can improve and indeed monitor their corporate culture?
Yeah, so, you know, if you look at the problems that has happened in the financial institutions in certain countries where they have widespread misconduct, so corporate culture has been identified as a key contributing factor. And linked to that very closely is remuneration. I think regulators recognized it. For financial institutions, they are supposed to do a culture audit. Many regulators say you've got to do an audit of your culture, if you like. However, that's one thing. So we see some boards now starting to put in responsibility to oversee culture within the responsibility of certain committees, or even having standalone type committees looking at this whole area of corporate culture. But that's one thing. The other thing is, of course, as you say, you know, how do you monitor? So I think there are a few elements to it. The boards need to have conversation with management to say, in the different areas of culture. So when we think about culture, obviously ethical culture is very important. There's risk culture, performance culture, and customer focus, and so on. So, you know, what are good indicators for us to monitor how we are going? So engage with management. So what are the things that the board ought to be seeing from management? That's one element to that. But I always say boards cannot totally rely on what management provide. So boards needs to, the term I will use is triangulate that. In other words, use their own observations. Sometimes even participating, sitting in a town hall meeting, talking to some employees will give them a better sense. You don't want to micromanage, but I think boards need to be a little bit more involved in certain activities to observe, and even meeting with suppliers and so on. That's one. But also going online, looking at social media to see what people are talking about your company. So I think that's critically important. So I think that's how. Those are some of the things that I think boards can do to get a better sense of the corporate culture.
Professor Mark Yuntin, always great to talk to you. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us today. Professor Mark Yuntin is from the National University of Singapore Business School. Now be sure to visit our show notes to the CP Australia podcast webpage for links and more information on this week's episode. Thanks very much indeed for listening.
Thanks for listening to the CPA Australia podcast. For more information on today's episode, please visit the show notes at www.cpaaustralia.com.au/podcast. Never miss an episode by subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher.